Conventional wisdom, Jordan, says that either we came from the slime and sort of crawled our way onto land at some point, and then the process of evolution finally got us here the way we are now, or the Creator, the man we call, the being that we call God, put us here, as in Adam and Eve and the Bible. Are you saying it didn't occur either one of those ways?
Well, actually, I'm not saying I know for sure, but I think that there's a lot more we need to know about how the Bible came into existence and how so much of what is in the Old Testament was actually based on even earlier records. And I personally think that maybe intervention into our evolution might be a place to start to look how we got here.
Because, how would you go about making the case for intervention?
Well, I can't do it as well as those who have written on the subject. There have been some very illuminating studies done on how the ancient creatures that we find that are rather similar to man, and we know that they've been around for thousands and thousands of years, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, pops up the human as we know it today.
Mm-hmm.
And the jump in evolution or the jump in the creation just cries out that someone intervened in our evolution. And I don't know that much about the particular subject, but I am inclined to believe that there has been some sort of a intervention, because when you read in the Old Testament that God said, "Let us make man in our image," immediately you have a problem, as most Bible students know, with who is us and our. And then later on it says that man has become as one of us. Talking with a rabbi many years ago, he made the point that when you read that particular scripture where God said, "Come, let us make man," it was not saying that God was creating man at that point. It was actually saying, "Come, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness," implying that man was already here, but for being so great, he wasn't that great, and consequently, whoever they were, or whoever God is that's talking to himself, someone is saying, "Let's take what is here and refashion it. Let's make man in our image, after our likeness."
Well, so, do you think there was an event like the obelisk in 2001 or something of that nature?
Well, if I recall, there was a picture in one of Zachariah Sitchin's works that pictured a human laying on a table with glass rods going into the body and people standing around it, and this was all the way back to the Sumerian era. I'm just wondering, and I don't know for sure, this is not a field in which I am proficient in, but I just wonder if we weren't in some way or another manipulated into being the creatures that we are today by some higher force.
All right. Let me talk to some about something for a second that I think you are somewhat familiar with. My Area 51, I say my Area 51 because it is just adjacent to me here.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan, what are they doing there?
Well, I'll tell you, I went up to see Pat and Joe, good friends of mine, up at Little Alien, and I took two friends with me, Paul Tice, a publisher, and Ivy West, a lady from Hawaii who has a radio show, and she happened to be in town at the time, and I was going, and I was on my way to speak at Mesquite, I believe it was. And I was speaking at a UFO Congress there. This was the first weekend in December.
Uh-huh.
And on our way back on a Sunday morning, the three of us decided that we would go up to Area 51 because the three of us had never been there. So we drove up to Area 51. We met, and we had a lunch up there and talked with the people. And then when they were closing up that night, the Little Alien, I asked Joe, "Well, where do we go to see UFOs?" And so he said, "Well, if you're going to see anything, go out to the right, go out on the highway, turn right and go a couple of miles, and you'll see a black mailbox." Well, we were so excited, the two people with myself, and so we drove out onto the highway, and I turned left instead of right. And we drove about almost 20 miles looking for a black mailbox and talking and not realizing we're going in the wrong direction.
Uh-huh.
And we got out, and so when we finally decided we've gone too far and it's too late and we need to turn around, we stopped to turn the car around, and right where we stopped happened to be a very well-kept dirt road leading off into the desert. And, of course, it occurred to all of us that, well, maybe we'll take a drive on the dirt road and see where it goes. So we did. And we drove about 3 miles into the dirt road, and that night in particular was very overcast. It was rather windy, overcast. The clouds were moving very quickly. And so we were driving, as I said, about 3 miles into the interior of the desert, and all of a sudden I got spooked. I really legitimately became afraid that we were somewhere we were not supposed to be. It just occurred to me. And I said, look, I'm going to turn around and go back because we're not supposed to be here.
Yes.
And so they said, well, look, we've already come this far, and we've already, you know, and it's this late. At least we can do is stop for a few moments. So it sounded halfway reasonable. So I said, well, all right, just for a couple of minutes. So we turned the car around, shut the lights off, and we got out. I have no idea in the world where we are, out in the middle of nowhere. And we looked all around. There was nothing on the horizons anywhere. And then above our head, we looked up, and lo and behold, there were two large, round, glowing, white plate or saucer-shaped things, and I have no idea in the world what they were. And
wow.
While watching these two things floating, just they were not flying, but they were coming from north, going south, right over the top of our heads, right at the cloud line. And then right behind them were five others that broke out of the clouds. And there were seven brilliantly white, glowing, brown things. And as I said, I had no idea in the world what, in fact, we were looking at.
Jordan, being something of a ufologist and with a lot of interest in Area 51, after all, going to Area 51, of course you had your handy cam there, right?
No, not really.
Jordan.
Not even a little brownie camera. Nothing.
No.
Nothing at all.
Jordan.
So I don't know what the world it was, and I have no idea in the world why we didn't have anything, but we didn't. So that was too bad, but we didn't.
Oh, my.
So that was it. So we didn't have anything at all, and we were not able to take any pictures. And I'll tell you, I don't think that we were able, I don't think we would have been able to take pictures at all, because I suspect that that we would not have been able to actually photograph these things, because I believe they had the ability to mask themselves from a camera. So I don't think it would have done
all
us
right.
any good if we had have.
Jordan, what do you know about Area 51, aside from the sighting that you just had?
Well, I really don't know that much about it. It's history. As I said, I talked with my friends up there, and they gave me a little bit of the background. I'll tell you what I feel. My gut feeling about Area 51 and that area where we call the little alien is located. Once you go up there, you have to be there yourself to understand what I'm saying. There is a definite. Feeling there that there's something going on, and that there's definitely something spiritual happening there. And so I am totally sure that there's something going on up there, but I just don't know what yet.
All right.
And so I'm fascinated by that place, and I really don't know what to say about the military part of it. That was one of the things that was frightening me, really, and legitimately scaring me, is that I wasn't really too worried about what we were seeing in the sky as much as I was what maybe the military was going to come down on our heads, and we were out in the middle of nowhere, and they could take us away, and we'd never be found before.
Actually, I think they have a civilian security service up there.
Well, probably.
All right, Jordan, you talk a great deal about symbols and mythology.
Yes, that is actually subject which I am most interested in, is the influence of secret societies and fraternal orders on us today, and how they affect us. And that's the thing that I have been very interested in for some time. if you go back into the occult symbols that are used in religion and the secret societies of fraternal orders, you will find that we're using the same symbols today.
I'm hearing something in the background there, Jordan.
Yeah, I am too. Hold on, just a minute.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's a much better phone, Jordan. Whatever it was you were using, don't use it again.
Okay.
This is much better.
Okay, very good. Now, back to what I was saying. Occult symbols and emblems and how they have been used in the ancient world is very important to understand, because the same symbols and emblems are being used today. And it's a fascinating study when you get into the secret societies and the fraternal orders, and that has been the one place where I have always been fascinated.
All right, give us an example.
Well, let me explain how I got into this.
All right.
My mother had an uncle, when I was a child, had an uncle who worked in the Vatican, Secretary of State's office. And on occasions, every couple of years, he would come back to visit the family. And he would talk for hours with my father and friends about the intrigue going on throughout the world from the Vatican Secretary of State's office viewpoint. I had two uncles who are retired federal judges. My great-grandfather was a senator from the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Claude Pepper was a good friend of our family. So I grew up listening to politics and religion from behind the scenes, and I became aware at a very early age that there's just not too much difference between politics and religion. As my one of my uncles used to say, that there's never been a political movement in the world that wasn't a little religious, and there's never been a religious movement that wasn't a little political. So I have come to understand since then. I started my research into this quite legitimately because I was fascinated listening to these people talk. And I began back in 59.
Jordan, what were you trying to determine? I understand the fascination with religion and politics, but as you went back, what were you trying to figure out? What was the basis of the beginning of the search?
Well, yes, good question. I got the idea, somehow or another, the idea got across to me that the whole story behind religion and politics and the ancient world is a story that has been systematically kept from view by the powers that be in almost all civilizations and in all nations, that there has always existed, and I'm just grabbing for generally thoughts which led me to do my research.
Well, the obvious question is, what were they trying to hide from
us? Well, I think it was because the mystery schools of the ancient world were designed to protect certain very valuable knowledge, which was not to be allowed to the profane or to the mundane people. And so there was a cult, or hidden, and I should clarify that the word occult simply means hidden, that there were hidden influences in government and religion all the way back into the Sumerian and pre-Sumerian Egyptian times. There were priesthoods. And those priesthoods were the holders of wisdom and knowledge, and that kind of wisdom was not given to the common people. And I believe, and I was able to deduce that from hearing the kind of conversation, that that was still going on today. There is much knowledge that is readily available to those who are in a position to obtain it, but that there is much that has been hidden from us. And I don't think that that is in keeping with the American system, where certain societies groups would keep knowledge from the people. And consequently, I decided to, on my own, try to get to the bottom of where all of this stuff, you might say, comes from. Where did all of these religious concepts and belief systems originate? I'm born in December 28th, so I'm told I'm Capricorn, which is the searcher after the ends of all things, and that's really true for me because I have always been interested to go to the back and go to the bottom line to see where did things originate.
I'm still trying to understand, though. Did you hear a conversation when you were young? Did you hear somebody say something that led you to believe there was great there were great secrets that mankind somehow, or a few of mankind possessed that we didn't know about?
Yes, and not exactly in those words, but the general tenor of the conversation was that, I remember my mother saying, don't repeat these things that you hear, the men talking about. The general idea was that there is a priesthood or an order of power in the world, and these people, for instance, a classic example I can give you today is the is that group that meets up in Northern California, the Bohemian Society. The Bohemian Society meets for a couple of weeks in July every year, and their symbol, they have a symbol, and they have ceremonies in front of bonfires at 12 midnight, and I have pictures of this, where presidents and all of the big shots in government and industry meet for 2 weeks out of the year, as I said.
I've heard of it.
And they have an owl. They have an owl that looks to be at least 12 to 15 feet high.
Now.
And this owl stands in front of a bonfire, and they see all of these important people dressed in capes and robes, and they're all dressed in. And the article said that the owl is used by them to symbolize wisdom, because you can see things in the dark. Obviously, the people who lead this world are very wise, because they can, like the owl, can see things in the dark, implying that there is a whole world of knowledge out there that we're not privy to as normal citizens. And I think it's an idea whose time has come to at least make people aware of some of the tricks of the trade of politics.
Well, what do you think goes on at these meetings? I mean, somehow in my mind's eye, I just picture our vice president and President Clinton dancing around a giant owl, and I'm trying to figure out what you think goes on at these meetings. I mean, is there some imparting of knowledge or sharing of knowledge, or is it sort of like a ritual, or what's going on?
I think rituals have a lot to do with it. I think that there are certain spiritual values and knowledge which is held in common by the association, which is acted out in ritual. As I said, the fire beneath the owl, there are obviously overtones, occult symbols and emblems which have occult overtones.
An obvious question would be, many of the rich and powerful are said to be interested in an international single order, or the one world government, if you want. Is it somehow all related to that?
I tend to believe yes. I think so. And even just a general business acumen would tell me that it's easier to manipulate one government than 250. So if you're going to manipulate government, why don't you just have one government, and then you can control the entire world? And this is not so foolish as it might sound. It sounds like a melodrama for a movie, but...
It does.
But
Secret
but
of
actually,
the Bell or something.
Well,
and then I would even further speculate that somehow all of this is connected to an outworld source.
Well, that is one of the things which I totally believe. I think that there is some sort of a connection between the world government, if you please, some sort of an overstate over the world. And I have heard politicians, and I've heard knowledgeable people in military offhandedly talk about the world government. And you have to know that even the United Nations is based on some sort of a world system of government.
Oh, yes.
And consequently, if there is, in fact, some sort of a system in which all nations are aware and they honor certain things, even if they get cantankerous and get out of line, all nations and politicians and diplomats are aware that there is a world order of sorts.
All right, Jordan, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. Relax. We'll be back to you. We will try to make some sort of galactic sense of all of this when we come back. Jordan Maxwell is my guest, and you're listening to Dreamland.